can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
I'm Tom, that's Mike, on the line with us. Probably the biggest human being we've had on the show thus far, from Chikara, from Dragon Gate USA, from some Dragon Gate in general in Japan. Brody Lee is on the line, and I hate to start off on a bummer, but everyone's heard about the knee injury. If real quick, you could just, for those who haven't seen it or heard about it yet, describe exactly how it went down and what the doctor's giving you in terms of a prognosis for how long you're going to be out of the ring as of right now.
No problem. First off, thanks for having me. And it's an honor being the largest human being on the show. And basically, I was at Dragon Gate USA event in New York City on, I believe, June 5th. And I was kicking the crap out of Rich Swann and Johnny Gargano. And I actually kicked Rich Swann in the face, and my left knee buckled underneath me. And it turned out I had dislocated my patella and minorly torn my ACL and MCL. So basically, last week they went in, did surgery, cleaned everything up because the dislocated patella had done a lot of damage. I started rehab right away. I actually have rehab tomorrow morning, and then I should be out for about, I want to say September-ish, so 3 months. But I'll know a lot more in the next few weeks of where I'm at after a few more rehab sessions.
I've seen some stuff on Twitter, you going back and forth with people about now having a bionic leg. Are you petitioning to the Chikara Board of Directors to possibly put yourself and Lex Luger and Brutus Beefcake together to create the bionic team for King of Trios next year?
Well, actually, right now in Chikara, there's a man by the name of Green Ant who is working with allegedly a bionic arm of some sort. And I don't know if he's going to be interested in teaming up or not. I mean, I do hold a pitfall victory over him, so I'm sure he respects me as he should. And, I mean, if he's interested in getting something going, we definitely have our third in Lex Luger.
You know what? I was thinking, if you remember that iPay-per-view, that was when the iPay-per-view didn't work. So, like, basically, no one actually saw it live. I think you had to go back on the on-demand, right? I think that was something where, you know, this injury happened, and it's like no one really knew about it until way after the fact, because I think this was worth, you know, the iPay-per-view had unfortunately cut out, so we didn't even get to see, you know, live on iPay-per-view or anything like that. But was this like, you know, the worst injury that you had in the ring, or, you know, what are kind of some different, you know, injuries you may have had prior to this or something like that?
Apparently my doctor had explained that I had popped my knee out in and out a couple of times, but never really did a ton of damage, and that's why it came out the third time. So I'd done that a couple of times, and actually about a month and a half earlier, I cracked a rib being powerbombed by Michael Elgin. And other than that, just real minor stuff that really didn't keep, I've never really missed a show before until now. The ribs kept me out of one or two, and then this kept me out of already 2 months. So other than this, nothing super major.
Yeah. Was that the WXW match from the arena where you wrestled Michael Elgin? I'm trying to think of when you would wrestle Michael Elgin. Was that it?
Actually, no. I wrestled a bunch. I wrestled him actually up in Ottawa, Canada. We had a rematch. We actually was voted Ottawa Match of the Year of some sort.
Ooh.
The year before, so we did a rematch, and he injured me. So
okay.
I'm hoping to do a third match with him.
Now, when Chikarasen was on and he was telling us about how awesome of a guest you'd be, he mentioned that because of the injury, you're missing out on a dream match that you had with Kevin Nash, of all people. Just if you could talk a little bit about Kevin Nash, and because Leonard said that you are a big fan of Mr. Nash, and how thrilled you were to be possibly stepping in the ring with him before the injury went down.
Pretty much August 7th, I have a date booked with me and my friend Marion Fontaine versus Omega Aaron Draven and Kevin Nash for Pro Wrestling Ohio in Cleveland. And like I said, I'm gonna figure it out in the next couple weeks, but I'm not going to really give up on that match until, I mean, if I'm not breathing, then I won't be there. But that pretty much would be the only reason I wouldn't be there. I feel that right now, me and Kevin Nash are on the same level with each having, you know, around one leg. So, I mean, I think can cancel him out and let Marion Fontaine take care of the dirty work there. Basically, though, I grew up, when I went to college, I discovered WCW and was a huge fan of the NWO and the Big Show, and Kevin Nash's carefree attitude through the next, whatever, 12 years really brought me to be a fan of his.
I thought you'd be a Vinny Vegas fan when you were saying that you were you liked him in WCW. I don't know if it, did you ever watch any of the Vinny Vegas stuff? I guess being like,
I did.
You know,
I'm not that old. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I know that. I just didn't know, like, maybe I actually Adam Cole like didn't start watching wrestling until like he was like 15, 16. So I didn't know like how old actually were you when you like started watching, because like there's like you know, you hear some wrestlers they got into it kind of maybe later on, and some wrestlers kind of got into it, you know, when they were a lot younger.
I watched a lot as a kid. I was a huge WWF fan, a huge Jake Roberts fan, a huge Rick Rude fan, and obviously of Hogan, Andre. Then I kind of got away from it for a bit, and then when I went into college and kind of discovered drinking and partying, I somehow discovered WCW again. So Monday nights became a good night in college, and it was all... At that time, WCW was on fire, and WWF was also on fire, so it was a really good time to kind of get back into it, and then, so I just kind of stayed with it all the way through the ups and downs of it now.
Now, you mentioned the WCW fandom in college. One of the big things going on in WCW during that time was the whole cruiserweight boom, and you're part of a generation that came up with the whole cruiserweight deal. There's a lot of junior heavyweights on the indies right now going that are influenced by Japan, by Mexico, and by those WCW guys. If you could explain just how it was different coming up with those guys being, you know, as tall as you are, as big as you are, and you know, not necessarily, because I believe I heard you did an interview with Brian Alvarez where he discussed how you had to learn how to wrestle like a big man, how to stand like a big man, and not try to go out and, you know, try to be a 6'7" cruiserweight, you know. So just if you could talk about how – sorry, I had a hiccup. If you could describe how that was different for you coming up and being so much bigger than everyone else around you pretty much.
Like you said, I had to teach myself to be a big man because I essentially thought that if I went out there and did everything these little guys did, that I'd get noticed straight away and I'd be the biggest star in the world. The problem being was that I wasn't doing the things as well as the little guys, so it came off sloppy and not as good as it should be. And I liken it to an MMA fighter who might be really good at jiu-jitsu, but always has his fights, keeps him standing and always wants to have a slugfest. It may not be his forte, but that's what he wanted to do, and that's what was in his head. So for me, it was being a little guy and doing a bunch of exciting things, whereas after a couple of years, I finally slowly discovered that being a big guy is where it's at. I'm going to make more money, I'm going to get more exposure, and I'm just going to be more dominant over people. And it became a much easier life for me in the independent wrestling world. And so I guess it was tough, but mostly it was my doing, wanting to do more things and not being, I guess, smart enough to realize that my road was easier paved another direction.
Now, also, when you were breaking in as well, it was interesting. I was reading up some earlier today that you had trained some with Tony Mameluke up in the upstate New York area. And a lot of people only know Tony, unfortunately, as being that guy that fell on his head in ECW. which is a shame, because if you watch a lot of his stuff after that, he's one heck of a mat wrestler. He's I believe he was a student of Dean Malenko, if I'm not mistaken, and like he's the type of guy that could stretch 8 ways to Sunday. If you could real quick, because Tony Mameluke's not a guy that he's not like he's a trainer that has like a lot of students out there. I believe you even he didn't have like your full training under him. You just went up there every once in a while to train under him. But just describe his training style and some of the things that he helped show you and the other guys that went up there to train under him.
I will absolutely say that he is a mat technician and incredible on the mat. He actually won state championships in New York in amateur wrestling way back in the day. He lived in Schenectady with his girlfriend at the time, and there was a little promotion there that ran, and basically three guys from Rochester, which was 4 hours away, would drive down there, and he would come and do us a favor and just come and train us, and for really no reason. basically he would show us things that we didn't know, we didn't ever would know, and basically he trained me in a lot of things that I would have never known and probably should have never known. But being a big guy and working with all these little guys again, he came in and showed me hold upon hold and just numerous amounts of things, little psychology things, little things that he learned through the roads. And this is when he was in ECW and getting beat up a lot, or in ROH too, getting beat up a lot. And he would show us ways around that and ways to take people down and ways to control people. And it was just invaluable the way that he taught me.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Okay, sorry.
I didn't know if you were going on there.
No, I just wanted to make sure you're still there because it looked like maybe you had fallen off the line.
Am I boring or what?
Yeah, no.
No, not at all.
We legitimately have so many issues with...
Yeah, I was going to say, we have Skype. It sucks.
Major league production here, obviously, where people fall off the lines left and right. We've had episodes of Chikarison where we seriously had to restart like 5 or 6 times because we couldn't hear him. Yeah, which...
That's why we wanted to make sure we were, like, fully prepared, like, ahead of time, like, when we had you on. We're like, we can't fuck this up at all, man. When we got him on the line, we're going to make him wait, so...
We had to
prep this in advance, but we're all right. We shouldn't even admit to that on the air. But anyway, I'm here.
No problem.
I was gonna say if they.
We got a lot of questions asked, Tom. So let's go.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that it's a podcast that everyone knows that we put together for $0.00. So there's
exactly.
Yeah. So we did ask around, cause we wanted to tell the world that Brody Lee was going to be on our show. And a lot of people had a lot of things we wanted to bring up. So it was like a ridiculous amount. I have a list here that seriously goes about 4 or 5 pages. Obviously we won't get to everything, but I wanted to bring up some stuff. Half of them seem to be from, your good friend Mookie Ghana, who sent us a long, long list of questions. What he usually does
is he'll send questions to the interviewer that he wants answered but won't just ask me in regular life, which I don't understand.
I was gonna say I don't even feel comfortable asking half of these because they just seem like inside jokes. Like,
yeah.
Hey Brody, what about Barry Hardy's gear?
Exactly. And to be fair, he actually saved the Brian Alvarez interview because I don't think Brian Alvarez knew who I was from a hole in the wall, which was completely fair, but like he had Mookie's list of questions and it led the interview perfectly. So he's good. I mean, there's a fine line that Mookie toes.
Yeah.
He's a good fellow and he posts lots of stats on the internet, so he's a good
fellow. Oh my God, and I love them all.
Well, Ed Storm loves them all because apparently he's like Lance's statistician now for his little career.
That's true, I saw that.
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
So one question he did want to ask that I wanted to ask as well, because being on the American Indies, there's not a lot of guys that are a heck of a lot bigger than you or, you know, even like Claudio and Hero around that size, but not really a whole lot of other guys. Dragon Gate USA, you got to team up and wrestle with Aki Bono, who is a building of a man. And you brought up, you know, being a big fan of the Big Show, and that's one of the few things we have in common with them, that you're one of the few Americans who can say that you've wrestled Aki Bono in America. So just your thoughts and your memories on working with Aki Bono and just in general, you know, what type of guy is he?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it working with or just kind of being in the same ring with him. I believe you said a mountain of a man, and he is – it's scary when I stare eye-to-eye with him, and he's 4 times as wide as me. And literally anything he wanted to do to me in there, he could have. And I believe he tried, and I fought with all my gusto to protect myself and to do what I could. I don't think it was quite the 5-star affair that people thought it would be, but – I got the job done, and I do hold a pinfall victory over Aki Bono, which is pretty cool.
I was there live for that. I thought it was good for what it was supposed to be. I thought it was fine. Obviously, it wasn't going to be Steamboat Flair, you know, or anything like that. Obviously, no offense to you. But, I mean, you know, it was fine for what it was. Yeah.
Aki Bono selling definitely resembles Ricky Steamboat, and my offense definitely resembles Ric Flair. So, I mean, I can tell you get that mixed up.
Now, real quick, because I don't necessarily know how serious Mr. Akiboto takes himself. What was his reaction when it was brought up? Hey, you want to do that deal where the Osirian portal hypnotizes you and then you dance?
I don't know if this is going to blow up the internet world, but it was actually his idea. He does not take himself seriously. In the back, he's one of the coolest guys I've ever met in wrestling. And actually, I was supposed to be in Japan right now, and I believe I was supposed to be wrestling him in Japan. So I'm really upset that the injury kind of held that back, but hopefully they'll go back to that in Dragon Gate.
Yeah.
But he's really just a very cool man, and I mean, just has his family, lives for his family, and is just so laid back and just great, but just scary in the ring.
What was it like, if you know, while we're before we really get into, because we get, do have some random questions while we're on the subject of Dragon Gate. Like, what was it like going over to Japan and wrestling for Dragon Gate? Like, when was it exactly? Because it was earlier this year, correct? It was sometime around then. I'm not sure exactly when.
Yep. I've been over 4 times for kind of short stints through December through February, and
okay.
Honestly. The culture and the land there is by far one of the favorite things, and the respect they have for everybody there and the way their culture is, and it's just amazing. Like, for me to be able to take my bags, and me and Trevor, me and Ricochet would take our bags and set them in the middle of Tokyo and go into a store and not have to worry about my bag being stolen is unbelievable to me. Then to come home to the Newark airport and to have to lock my bag to myself at an airport in America. So it's very refreshing to go there and just to see what it's all about. And I mean, I haven't gone back after the tragedy happened. I was really looking forward to that, to see, you know, how everything was going, to see everybody. But hopefully when I get healed up, I can get back there again.
Now, going back to the Big Show, because that's where every wrestling interview ever has to go, of course, the Big Show, like 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Whenever he's on one of those talk shows like Conan O'Brien, the first question always is, so how much does it suck to travel in Japan, big man? No, not that creepy, because, I mean, Andy Richter's a little creepy like that, but I don't think Conan's sitting on him. But, no, just in, like, general, because you are a very, well, it's like we keep going back to, a very tall fellow. Japan's not built for big people.
No.
So if you could, if you have any funny stories about, like, a toilet breaking or, like, a bed that you have to, like,
or even just the long, the long plane ride was one of the questions someone asked. Like, what's it like being on that airplane for that long period of time, just being a tall guy?
I think the longest of the four I took was 16 hours total. And being on a plane not in first class and not in an emergency exit row for 16 hours is hellish. Especially when your laptop power runs out and you have nothing to do. But literally the space that I have on an airplane is minimal, and I even have people next to me being like, are you okay? Is there anything we can do? And I mean, there's nothing they can do. So I usually jump on the emergency windows or something like that, you know, just to give a little extra space. But the plane rides are hell. When you're in Japan for Dragon Gate, you actually ride around on a bus. So that's not so bad. I mean, I would go right to the back and spread my legs out. A lot of the guys on the roster would love taking pictures of me in their environment, because I just didn't fit in things. My feet hung off every bed. They would give me double hotel rooms for the beds. I would rest up, so I would hit my head on everything in the stores. There was places where I could stand up, and my head would be on the ceiling at restaurants. Just all kinds of crazy stuff. Actually, one of my favorite Twitter moments of my life, I was wearing a Chris Cooley shirt in Japan, and I stood up at a restaurant, and Shima took a picture of me, because literally from head to toe, it was ceiling and then floor, and my head was right on the ceiling. So he took a picture that Twittered it to me. I retweeted it to Chris Cooley of the Washington Redskins, and he retweeted it, so that was really cool.
Oh, wow.
And see, Mike would be the authority on this, because he's the big sports guy, whereas...
Tom doesn't know... I know sports. Tom doesn't know sports. We're going to get into that in a minute.
I was thinking, is Chris Cooley that guy from Glee? And then you explain he's from the Redskins, so...
I mean, either way, he's probably more popular if he was on Glee.
Yeah, which I used to be more popular in this household because I swear we watch Glee like every day. Now speaking of small fellow, since the fellow I was referencing was small, being Chris Colfer, there's an incident at a Chikara show recently. Not incident, like you killed half the town, but there was a heckler that you chased out of the building in Union City. A lot of people wanting us to ask if what was going through your mind when you went after him, like you were gonna rip his head off necessarily, but you certainly scared him out of the building.
Am I allowed to swear on this show?
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely.
This fucking idiot comes to the building only to get himself over and literally yell the opposite, not even caring what it is, but yelling the opposite of what everybody else is yelling. Yelling at the referees and just literally pissing off the entire crowd. And I didn't even know this when I came out there. I went out there, the guy said one thing to me, and I took one step towards him, and he booked towards the back of the room. And then he kept talking, though, and I kept taking steps towards him, and literally, apparently, he ran out the building. I was then forwarded something on the internet from Larry Dallas, who apparently goes on the Declaration of Independence, and he sent me this thing that apparently this kid wrote on there saying that he was happy that I was injured. And so I took that. I actually loved that, and it really made me happy that I affected this kid in this way. So, I mean, I'm not going to say I don't want him to come back to the show, because, I mean, I like him buying tickets, but if you're going to be a fucking idiot, then expect to be dealt with.
Yeah, what's it like, just like general, because, I mean, I'm from Philly, so I go to the arena plenty of times, and I see these fans, and, I mean, I love a lot of the people listening to this, I mean, are great fans, don't get me wrong, but then there's also just, like you said, just fucking idiots, like, what's it like as a wrestler? Like, take me, like, you know, to the other, like, in the locker room. Like, what do you guys think of, like, some of these fans that go to these shows? Like, I mean, are there just, is there just, like, a certain degree of respect that you obviously, you know, want out of us, but just not just to be an asshole for no reason at all, obviously, right?
Right, and the thing is, like, I respect the fans to no end because, honestly, again, as everybody says, they're why we're there. And if you're not in the stadium, I have no freaking reason for being in the ring. I'm there to entertain you guys, and that's my job at the time. If you don't like it, that's perfectly fine. I'm not averse to being heckled. I'm not averse to being yelled at. I've had some of the meanest things ever said to me, and they don't affect me because they're people that obviously hate themselves. To have to say those things to somebody, you must hate yourself. Don't like because I can't understand what that would come from to try to get a reaction from somebody to have to say that to someone. But basically in the back, it's an annoyance. Especially I feel bad for the rest of the crowd because it's like going into a school where you have 100 kids and 5 of the kids are bad. And that turns into the rest of the kids being thought of as bad. And that's not the case. It's the 5 that are bad. So if you go to a show and you have 1 or 2 people heckling and being idiots, and then the people in the back are like, oh, well, fuck this. You know, the rest of the crowd sucks. That's not the case. And it's usually 1 or 2. And if you deal with them properly, then there's usually no problem. And they're like big bullies. If you go right to their face, then it's over.
Exactly. See, I'm not necessarily, like, saying, hey, go heckle these guys. But, like, I can see a fan being all, like, a jackass towards, like, let's say a smaller, less threatening wrestler. But then you got Brody Lee, you know, 6'7", looks like he could rip a person in half. I'm not going to yell mean things to you. I might run and cry, but I won't. So I don't get this guy's mentality, but hey, more power to him. Like you said, he pays. So whatever.
Right.
But that's
the thing. If you're going to pay, then I guess that gives you your right to say, but again, it was at a Chikara show, which there is explicit rules that explained before the show and that the fans have. And for this kid just to be running his mouth, it wasn't necessary. And I honestly wasn't trying to scare him. I was going to say something to him. And, I mean, that's kind of the worst part is when I go up to somebody, I'm only armed with my mind and my mouth because I can't touch these people unless they come across the rail, which has happened a couple times to me. But, like, at a Chikara show, I'm not there looking for trouble. I'm just looking to shut them up. And it worked the way it worked, so I was happy.
Yeah. The second you said you've had a couple of incidents with people jumping the rail, I immediately want to ask, what exactly happened?
The really good one was we were in Syracuse, New York for the promotion 2CW, which is a great little independent promotion.
Yeah, yeah.
man, they put on great shows, and I can't put over 2CW enough. I would oblige everybody to go check them out. But
I have a couple of their DVDs. They're a nice little company. They run, like, you know, in the New York area, which you're from, like, around there.
Great
indie
names. Yeah. Eddie Edwards and Dave Richards work there a ton. The Olsen Twins, me, Cheech, Cloudy, everybody's working there. So it's a good company. But we were doing a heated interpromotional robbery there, and we had just we were from another city, and we came in and took over, blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the show, the fans were really drunk, and we were in Binghamton, New York, and they were serving, like, $2 mixed drinks all night, and people were liquored up. And so we got back into the crowd after a kind of a big brawl, and we were celebrating, and this guy walks in the back door, and I'm looking at him, and he grabs a chair and just throws it from four rows deep into the ring, nearly killing Jimmy Olsen, nearly killing a wrestler by the name of Loco Vida. So I kind of, this was an incident where he jumped the rail. I proceeded to jump the rail and took him out to the parking lot, and I may have exchanged some punches with him other than words. And then coming back in, another fan decided to fight me, and that went well too, and then I was chased away before the cops came. So that was a good one.
Oh, did you ever kick somebody in the face, like legit, like just, you know, do the kick right, kick someone in the face during, like, an actual fight? Because, I mean, obviously you do that in the ring, but I mean, just picturing you at the bar just doing that would just make my year, you know, ever.
I mean, I kind of kicked it off like that, but yeah. I guess not full.
That kind of reminds me of a story I heard about Nate Webb once, where he was in a bar fight and he goes to throw, like, a super kick, and he slaps his leg, and someone turns to him and goes, "Why'd you slap your leg?" And he shrugs. And,
Well, that's why I travel a lot with Cheech and Cloudy, and we always get the old school promoters that would say to us, like, you know, they do something crazy high flying, and then in the back they would say, you know, if you were in a bar fight, would you climb up to the top of the bar and dive off into a diving elbow? And we'd always be like, well, I don't know. I guess if it calls for it.
Oh. Now, I wanted to ask a question. I want to preface this by saying I'm not being rude. This is how Mookie worded it. The stupidest bump or dive that you have done this far in your career.
Oh, boy. There's a whole bunch of them. But, when I was really young and dumb, I wrestled Abyss inside of a steel cage, and he proceeded to beat the living shit out of me, which included him hitting me with a plastic chair that broke, left the ring, and my girlfriend's brother caught it, who was sitting in the eighth row. So that was pretty dumb, because I realized I had a concussion for 3 months after the fact. But that's not even the worst one of the match. I decided to climb up to the top of the cage, and being an idiot, jumped off and did a diving headbutt into thumbtacks. And that destroyed my entire body. So I never wanted to go up to the top of a cage again. I believe it was a time when Kurt Angle and Chris Bell were dropping headbutts off the top of the cage, and so that made it look easy.
I was going to say, that's the guy you want to follow in terms of taking care of your body, is Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit are a couple of really, really good role models.
Oh, the dogs are in close to the pool area. Anyway, sorry about
that. I don't know, with the Casey Anthony trial coming, you know, it should give everybody hope. If you're going to commit murder, you can get away with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Our good fun Irish friend Alan Cunahan, Alan Forel, wanted to bring up, because this is one of his favorite fellows in the whole world. When you were over in Japan, did you have any wacky Stalker Ichikawa stories?
Oh my, Stalker Ichikawa is a great, great man. Basically, what you see in the ring is what you get everywhere with him. On the bus, in the locker room, everywhere. In the hotel, in the dojo, everywhere. Stalker Ichikawa is Stalker Ichikawa. And, he's just a really kind man who just has kind of found his niche in the comedy world, and fits in really well with the Dragon Gate guys, and really fits in with all of Japanese wrestling. If you look at it, the Japanese crowd gets him, and I think the American crowd is starting to. He kind of got over in Atlanta pretty good, but I think if they pay attention to him better and just see the little intricacies that he brings to comedy wrestling, He's just a great guy.
Once again, Mike, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, buddy.
Mike, Skype said you dropped off.
No, so, I'm here.
And I'm not editing these off either. The people are going to know how just shoddy this production is.
Hey, why not?
Yeah. Now, apparently, again, Mookie wanted me to bring this up, and I feel a little weird because this isn't my inside joke, but Steve Corino apparently owes you a T-shirt. Is that correct?
way back, we're all fans of ECW, and I was especially a fan of Steve Corino, and I convinced my friends that we really needed to get some Steve Corino merchandise. And we went online and we ordered merch, and we never received said merch. I believe I was supposed to get an 8x10 and a Steve Corino T-shirt, and it never came. And Mookie always wonders why I don't take it up with Corino. And I guess I just feel a little weird being like, listen, man, you owe me a fucking T-shirt, so if we could sell this up. But I think it was explained to me that he changed servers at the time or something. I was in Japan, and, you know, I was perfectly fine with the explanation. So, it's always a good story to tell that Steve Curl still owes me a T-shirt.
So, is changing servers the 2001 version of my Twitter got hacked, possibly?
Yeah.
Now, going back to, like you said, Wack, when you were a fan, back in the day when Ring of Honor was first starting, I guess you and Colin, I don't know if anyone else, I'm sure there were other people going with you, obviously, but you were going to the ROH shows in Philly. Explain how it was going from being a fan and being literally at the first ROH shows to debuting with the company, ironically enough, the night that Gabe Sapolsky got fired.
Yeah, we would drive down from about 6 hours from Rochester to Philly, and we attended the first three, and I attended a whole bunch of other ones after that. It actually got into doing Ring Crew because from Rochester, New York, Kevin Dunn and Mean Marcos were the Ring Crew Express there. They came from our town. So we slowly got entwined with them, and we just started doing Ring Crew with them. So it was always a dream of mine to be in Ring of Honor, but me and my friend would always discuss that we didn't want to be picked because we did Ring Crew that day. We didn't want to be picked because, oh, we need you for a spot today. We always wanted to be picked because they came and got us, and they wanted us there, and they had a plan for us. So when Gabe called me, and I was actually just heading to Germany and England for the first time, and I actually had to delay my debut, I was thrilled. Like, I was in seventh heaven because they called me and wanted me, and it was kind of like a goal reached and something that I honestly never thought would be. So for them to come and actually want me was a complete 360 from where I was, and it was great. I should say 180. 360 would be all the way.
As long as it's not a 450, because then everybody here comes too cold Scorpio. you mentioned Abyss earlier, and I really should be asking these questions in order, but quite frankly, I have ADHD, so what's it to you? you mentioned wrestling Abyss earlier. How often is it that you get to wrestle guys your size? Because it really seems like I said, there's so many, like, little tiny guys on the indies that it seems really rare that you get to wrestle a guy that comes eye to eye with you.
I'm going to say maybe 7 times.
Wow.
Claudio, Hero, Abyss, I guess Rhino is kind of my size. Guys like that. There's not a whole lot. Aki Bono's bigger than me, stuff like that, but Kevin Nash in August. But really, if you look around, there's really not a whole lot that will look eye to eyeball with me, so.
Now, sorry, I had a little bit of an issue with the Skype once again, because of course we can't go like 5 minutes without this thing goofing up. But I was gonna bring up, because you, like you said, you haven't gotten to unfortunately wrestle a lot of guys your size. Are there any big guys out there you were like, man, I want to wrestle that guy? Like going back and watching tapes of like Big Sky and WCW and being like, man, I would love to get my hands on Nitron. Or even just anyone in general, like, you know, watching old Nikolai Volkoff tapes, being like, oh, I would have fight for America's honor.
Other than Reese.
Big Ron Stud.
Pretty much looking back, I guess I was always kind of into, like, the brawls that Bruiser Brody was having, and, you know, like a Cologne or guys like that, or like a Harley Race. Like, I kind of was looking back and, like, seeing, like, the fights that Race and Flair would have in these cages, and would love to be a part of that, to be in front of those kind of crowds I guess I can think of nothing else that would be better.
So I will go ahead and tweet this to every Puerto Rican promoter there is. Hey, book Brody Lee. Just don't make sure your skin opens, because there's a lot of documentaries out about that now and the hat and all that. Mike, you said you wanted to bring up hockey.
Yes, I have a couple things I wanted to bring up. One very specifically hockey. I know you are a huge hockey fan. I'm a huge hockey fan. I know, like, I think I might have saw on Twitter a few times you actually go to Leafs games. Kind of describe, I guess, your hockey fandom, and I guess we can kind of get – I have a few questions from there we can get into.
Pretty much, I grew up playing hockey. When I was 4 and a half, my brother quit playing hockey, and my dad said, well, somebody needs to finish this season. So I was like, well, I will. So I finished the season. I never quit. I played a couple seasons with Brian Gianta and a couple of travel leagues, because he's from Rochester, New York, too, so that was pretty cool. And pretty much just grew up idolizing the Maple Leafs, because I despised the Buffalo Sabres, which was the town next to me, and I can't stand anything about Buffalo, the people, the anything. So I would always be a Toronto fan, and from there, 1993, they signed Doug Gilmore, and he took them to the conference finals, and I became in love with the franchise and Doug Gilmore.
Oh, so then you must be really happy he's going in the Hall of Fame, too, so.
Oh, my God. He's so happy. I'm actually thinking about going up and seeing
him. Yeah, say you go up there. I mean, it probably would be. Now, you're from like, around Rochester, right? I mean, you have, like, the Rochester Americans, which is, like, the American League team. And I guess you don't like them because, from what I understand, like, wasn't the management, like, really shitty or something like that? And just now they kind of tied up some loose ends that they had with the Sabres. I think they're back to being an affiliate with them or something like that.
Yep, they actually were affiliated with the Florida Panthers and I can't remember what other team for 2 years, which would split it was really terrible. And new ownership came in, and there was a big debacle with all the tickets and stuff like that. So they really weren't drawing. And this guy, Pegula, came in, who apparently has a ton of money.
Yeah, he bought, like, the Penn State hockey program, too.
$85 million he gave to Penn State hockey, and then he bought the Sabres, and then he just bought the Rochester Americans outright, too, and gave $5 million to the Portland Pirates so that they, you know, could break the affiliation with the Sabres. So this guy came in and just cleaned it up. So I'm really looking forward to what they're going to have in town. And my dream is that the Rochester Americans win lots of Calder Cups, and that the Buffalo Sabres continue to lose forever.
Exactly. No, see, I'm a Flyers fan. I guess Billy Lano just went to the Sabres. Actually, the Flyers is really weird. I want you to help me out here. I don't know what to think about my own team. And I know Tom was – I was even trying to explain to Tom. This is like if Zach Morris and Slater left Bayside or something like that. Like, Zach, it's like, you know, like, you got Jeff Carter and Mike Richards, like, the two, like, franchise centers just shipping out of town. Like, what did you think of that, maybe, like, as a non-Flyers fan? Because I know everybody hates us. Like, everybody hates Flyers fans. Everybody hates the Flyers and stuff like that. What did you think, like, besides, like, what the hell are these guys thinking?
See, I thought they did okay. They brought in younger talent. Yeah. They got their goalie signed. But, of course, like you said, two franchise centers gone, and the thing was, they weren't far from where they needed to be, and I think if they just brought the goaltender in and signed him and then gave that a try, maybe make these moves next year if they don't make it. I don't understand why they didn't give them another chance to do it. With the moves that they made, I don't think they're horrible. I think they're going to be fine, I think they just should have given it another shot before they went crazy with all these moves.
Exactly. Like, they got, like, Brandon Schenn, who's going to be good in a couple of years. But, I mean, is he going to win a cup? Yeah, but is he going to win a cup next year? Obviously, that's the thing, so.
Exactly.
But, no, like, I guess maybe we'll have you back on the show in September. We'll have Mike and Brody's hockey preview or something like that. I think that'll be fun to have. We'll have you back on. I was going to say, like, we don't have to talk about wrestling at all. We'll just talk about hockey, so I just – you know, I heard you're such a fan. I guess obviously following on the Twitter, you know, you're always talking about it. So it's good to know some good wrestling fans are also some hockey fans.
Another one, I don't know if you know Todd Sinclair, the head referee of ROH, is a huge hockey fan. El Generico is a huge hockey fan.
He's from Montreal, so, I mean, you know, obviously he's from there. And then I think Sinclair is from Boston.
Huge hockey fan. Mm-hmm. 2.0 are huge hockey fans, and one of them is a fan of the Montreal Canadiens, and one is a fan of the Bruins, so that was fun.
There you go.
So they're out there.
Very cool. I'm glad to hear that.
I was at a Chikara show with 2.0 when America and Canada played in the gold medal game.
And
we were actually able to tune in the locker room. So literally, I came back from my match with Greena and sat down in my gear in front of the TV. And then they went out and did that match, and they came back and did the same thing. We watched the rest of the game together, and only for Sidney Crosby to break my heart.
Yeah, I think that was Claudio was telling that story, I think, maybe like on a show with Alvarez just recently. Okay. I think you were at the bar in Pottsville or something like that, because that was like with Kiss and all those, the wall with all those different cartoons on the wall. So I think that might have been the same night. Yeah, that's funny. I guess everyone's like trying to get their match done real quick going in the back. So,
very cool.
All right, Tom, that ends the hockey segment.
I was going to say, even if I was a sports fan, I'm from Indiana. We have like Larry Bird.
Had Manute Bol actually.
He's not from Indiana.
No, but he played. There's an Indianapolis. There was an Indianapolis hockey team that actually had Manute Bol come in and play a game.
I might actually have to watch that because he's one of like seven.
He was like some like the tallest skater. Do you remember this, Brody?
I did not know that.
Yeah, Manute Bol, apparently they did like some. You know, like how they'll have like minor league hockey do like ridiculous shit gimmicks and stuff like that. You're from Rochester, you know the Rochester Red Wings, the Buffalo Bisons, you probably know all those teams up there. But yeah, like I guess they just brought in these, they just had that wacky gimmick, I guess. So.
Now I want to see, and I'm actually going to challenge Aki Boder to a skate-off.
There you go.
I think I can win that.
I think you could, yeah.
See, the only thing I know about hockey is that Coach Bombay is really good at bringing together ragtag teams to glory. So other than that, I know nothing. Like, I know what a goalie does because I know Goldberg and Julie Gaffney were very good at it. But other than that, like...
Bill Irwin was a hockey player.
He was. And I also know that hockey players are very good at going through malls and, like, skating and making people go, no, hockey player on an escalator. Whatever will I do?
They like to fight.
Yes, they do, and that occasionally hockey players will like Pantera, and the girl from the newspaper will awkwardly agree, like because obviously kids that watch Disney movies need to relate to people who listen to Pantera. Seriously, it was in D3. It was the most awkward reference in the history of Disney movies.
Classic movies though.
Yes, they are. And actually, true story, I don't mean to go off on a personal tangent, but on our – I got married recently, and on our cake cutter thing, it says ducks fly together because she made a comment like, I'm an odd duck, and I reply it as Coach – the one thing Coach Bombay taught me, ducks fly together. Boom. Know about it.
That's awesome.
Yes. I'm trying to find Manute Bol on YouTube playing hockey. You got me distracted, Mike.
Yeah, jeez. We're gonna have to Google that one. We'll have to post that for another time, I guess.
It's not on there.
I'll send it to Brody over here via Twitter, and I guess that would be a good segue, I guess, to kind of get all the plugs in. Brody has an awesome Twitter, everyone, so check that out. And whatever else,
I'm kind of just figuring out the Twitter game. I didn't really understand the whole gathering followers thing, and now it's become, now that I'm hurt, I just kind of look at it every day, and I'm like, I need more followers.
I honestly like I really never thought much of it until like I was just sitting bored at work, and you're just kind of sitting at work just reading stuff all day. It kind of gets addicting. So
When I'm a little down on myself, I'll go and look at some of the local wrestlers around and see that I have 800 more followers than them, and it makes me feel a lot better about myself.
Speaking
but
of,
I look at CM Punk, who has 201,000.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Twitter, real quick, because we were talking about it with Rob Naylor last week. Do you follow the fake Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
I do not. I'm actually my
start.
Friend Bobby Shields has just kind of alerted me to a bunch of these fake accounts that I really need to follow.
There's the fake Jim Duggan, who talks about, like, pooping in USA all the time, and it is fantastic. And then there's a Twitter that's just, like, Bobby Heenan quotes that I just found the other day.
Nice.
That is hilarious. And then there's a fake Kelly Kelly one that just started today that I think you just subscribed to, Mike.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Yes. So, yeah, Twitter. Oh, go ahead.
Talks about dating everybody.
Yes, about Kevin Dunn, or what was it, Johnny Ace brought me in for a lingerie shoot, but instead of a camera, it just went click, click, click. We don't want anyone having to apologize on Twitter for their comments about Kelly Kelly on this show. Internet humor. It's been fantastically awesome having you on. You've been awesome
guest. Thank you so much for coming on, man. Best of luck. You know, we hope you get, you know, feel better and see you back in the ring, you know, sooner than later, definitely.
Anytime, man. I had a great time. You guys are easy to talk to, so anytime.
Very good to hear. And we'll have to have you back on, too, for the hockey. I'm gonna hold you up on that. We're going to get you back on. We'll have, like, a hockey preview of Mike and Brody Lee.
Yeah, Mike. I'll teach you the recording equipment. I'll set that one.
Exactly. You're going to have to teach me how to record.
So yeah, and then I'll record. Oh, go ahead.
Maybe if one of you is just handling the recording, you want somebody to have food, and then, you know, you could make, you know, a little more professional production here.
Exactly. Oh. Exactly.
Shot to the heart, and you're to blame. Oh.
Now, you guys have Shakar Sinan a lot. Is that true?
Yes, about once every couple of weeks, and he's pretty much the reason why people started listening, I kid, because he promotes us like all the time.
Next time he's on, just tell him 2 tears in the bucket. And just if you leave it at that, it's good.
All right. I'm sure we'll get a tweet because he's going to listen to this like the second we put it up.
That's my next.
Yeah, because he told me that he literally gets updates on his phone when we update. So
I think he should get you a cake by April as well.
I actually have. I would love to make a plug for Cakes by April because my girlfriend. Last year for her birthday, got a Tinkerbell cake from her parents, which was possibly the ugliest Tinkerbell I've ever seen in my life. And so I went to Chicago with this dilemma and made an order through Cakes by April and got the most incredible Tinkerbell cake I have ever seen in my life. And a happy wife is a good wife. So
Look at that.
I'm
learning that very quickly. Very quickly. I'm two months in next week. So,
I mean, if you need a cake, go to Cakes by April because it was literally I was blown away by the fine detail of this cake. So she's very talented at what she does.
Yeah, definitely.
So with that, do you have anything else you'd like to let people know about? Any websites? Any, you know, obviously the upcoming tag match for Pro Wrestling Ohio with Kevin Nash. Anything else you got going on?
That's on Go Fight Live, by the way, too. That's from the Resolution, the Pro Wrestling Ohio. I think that's on Go Fight Live, so they can see that there.
Yep. It'll be Sunday, August 7th on Go Fight Live, and like I said, nothing's gonna keep me from there, so I'll be there. After that, I really don't know what my next move will be. Like I said, I'll know more in the next couple of weeks after a couple of rehabs where my leg stands. It right now, it feels good. I don't know if that's the Vicodin or what, but I mean, it feels good. I'm moving around a little bit more than I was. Like I said, I go to rehab again tomorrow. So I don't really have any dates right now to plug, but Brody Lee 93 on Twitter. I would love to get 1,000 followers. I think I have like 880 at some right now. It's a lot easier said than done. So if anybody has any tips on getting more followers, please feel free to share those. Because like I said, I'm home and I'm hurt and I do nothing. So.
All right. Right now you have 884 as of right now. And this could obviously change when people listen to this. So we're going to get you to 1,000 by, let's say. All right. Very soon. So let's work on that.
Very soon.
I was
going
to say by the end of the, maybe by the end of the.
Let's say 11th of November. How about that? one last question before you let you go. If the tag match goes to like a double count out or double disqualification, will the right stuff come out of retirement to challenge Oz?
You know, the right stuff has been put away for a while, and the red stuff is what got me my job at Chikara. So I mean, the right stuff was doing something right, but he was also doing lots of things wrong. So I'm not sure if he'll ever be back. But Oz versus the right stuff Roy Lee does definitely is selling tickets somewhere.
Yes, and we'll be sure to get him, you know, midgets and all that, so he can, so Oz can have his little crew with him. But with that, once again, it's been awesome, been a pleasure. I'm sure I'll hit you up very soon to have you back on. I want to thank you. I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank Literature Carson for being a good pal of the show. I want to thank Mike for being attractive, according to my wife. And most of all, I want to thank Oscar Meyer for making delicious bologna. With that, we're out of here. Thank you very much for listening. Talk to you later.